The Eretz Yisrael is much more than dirt. Eretz Yisrael certainly has holy soil, and that's a mission in Kiddushin. In our Masechta, Kiddushin Lamavav and Beis Lamazayim and Aleph, there are the agricultural mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael relate to the Kedusha of the dirt. Kedusha Sa'aretz. Kedusha Sa'aretz means that the soil of Eretz Yisrael is holy, and therefore there will be holy means special restrictions and special mitzvah opportunities that apply to things that grow from that soil. As we began to develop last year, a little taste, Rav Schechter has a much longer presentation. Seven different aspects of Eretz Yisrael, not two dinim, not three dinim, but seven dinim of Eretz Yisrael, one of which is Kedushas Haaretz, one of which is agricultural mitzvahs only apply in the holy soil of Eretz Yisrael. But then there are other aspects. There's Eretz Yisrael also, independent of the Kedusha of the soil, Eretz Yisrael is also the place of Kedushas HaMikdash. It's probably true that even when they were the Heter Bamos, that they have a private Mizbeach before the building, before the building of the Beis HaMikdash, probably Bamos could only be in Eretz Yisrael. Probably even before the Beis HaMikdash, you couldn't build a Bama in Egypt. And certainly, Beis HaMikdash has to be in Eretz Yisrael. And there are different dinim of the Beis HaMikdash that extend to different parts of Eretz Yisrael. So Eretz Yisrael has Kedushas Haaretz, Kedusha of the dirt, of the soil, agricultural Kedusha. And the Kedushas, it's the center of Kedushas HaMikdash. And there are other aspects also. Right? Eretz Yisrael is the place where we are closest to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is most involved with us. That's why the Chumash tells us in the middle of Chumash Vayikra that our mitzvahs count most and our aveiros count most. Right? The Chumash says, Losaki Eretz Eschem. If Jews are going to commit aveiros in Eretz Yisrael, it's a greater slap, the way the Ramban, I think, puts it, quote, based midrashim, Paltrin Shal Melech, in the palace of the king. So you're going to do aveiros in the palace of the king. That's a far greater, far more traitorous act. It's a far greater disrespect to the king to violate mitzvah HaMelech in the palace. An aveir in Eretz Yisrael is worse than aveir in Chutz La'aretz, and vice versa. Midah Tova is even greater than Midah Peronius. A mitzvah, every mitzvah in Eretz Yisrael is far greater than a mitzvah in Chutz La'aretz. And the fact that we're Eretz Yisrael is a place where we can most easily, most naturally connect to Ribbono Shalom. That's why it's the best place for davening. That's why our davening goes via Eretz Yisrael, no matter where you daven. We conceive of it as going via Eretz Yisrael. And that's why we spoke about last time. That's the place of Nevuah. The Makam HaNevuah is in Eretz Yisrael. Presumably that all ties into the idea of Paltur and Shalom. Right? That was the Gemara Moed Katan, quoted by the Rashi in the beginning of Yechezkel. That Nevuah can only, typically is Eretz Yisrael. If you started in Eretz Yisrael, you can continue in Chutz La'aretz. So a friend of mine, who is both a Rav and psychologist, pointed out to me many years ago that in the psychological community, this goes back to pre-internet 2.0, the big issue was, could you have therapy sessions over the phone? Professionally appropriate to meet with a client and have a therapy session on the phone instead of in person? So now the question can also be, how about you're going to Skype with someone? You're going to Skype with your psychologist. Is that appropriate? Is that the wrong thing to do by your patient? So there is this approach, there is a school of thought that once you already have a therapeutic relationship, you've met the person in person, so then for some reason someone's on vacation, whatever it is, though there's an emergency, so that you could continue the relationship by phone if you already established a relationship in person. But this school of thought says you can't begin a relationship on the phone. So that's a Me'en that he suggested. That's a Me'en, right? Rabbi Tani Schwartz is a Rav in Elizabeth and is a psychologist in private practice. He suggested that that's a good mashal for this idea of Nevuah. That the relationship created in person, once you had the face-to-face, so to speak, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Nevuah in Eretz Yisrael, so then you can continue even, so to speak, on the phone when you're in Chutz La'aretz. But it has to begin, at the very least, with the face-to-face, and the face-to-face is the best. Again, so that's an aspect of Eretz Yisrael that has nothing to do with the Kedusha of the soil, nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael being the Makam HaMikdash. That's the connectedness we feel to Ribbono Shel Olam. Then yet another aspect is that Eretz Yisrael is our national homeland. Eretz Yisrael is the glue, is the mitzaref of Kol Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is the glue that brings us together as a people. That's why the Gemara in Sota points out, based on Psukim and Chumash, that until the Jews came into Eretz Yisrael, they were individually chayiv to keep mitzvahs, but they didn't have Kol Yisrael Reivim Zeh L'Zeh. There was no reciprocal, mutual responsibility for one another until they came into Eretz Yisrael. That's the difference between the bris at Sinai and the bris at Arvas Moa at the end of in Kisav Onitzavim and so forth. That's the Gemara Sota says. They come into Eretz Yisrael, that's when Kol Yisrael Reivim Zeh L'Zeh is going to start. And that's the story of Achan. Because until we came into Eretz Yisrael, we were Jews, but we weren't full, and we had started to become a Jewish nation, certainly Yitzias Mitzrayim and Mamre Har Sinai, but that process of becoming a Jewish nation was only completed at the end of Chumash, when Klal Yisrael are al-Saf, on the cusp of going into Eretz Yisrael. And they go into Eretz Yisrael, that's when it finally all comes together. And that's why, again, all these various mitzvahs we spoke about last time, different mitzvahs that are Sibur mitzvahs, will often be centered in or exclusive to Eretz Yisrael. Kiddush HaChodesh is supposed to take place in Eretz Yisrael whenever possible. Smicha must take place in Eretz Yisrael. When you count Jews for the purpose of seeing whether Rov Klal Yisrael violated the halacha based on the Psak of the Sanhedrin, we call that Par Helam Davar Shel Tzibur. Correct. That's right. The Torah says that it is possible, the last Masechet Nezikin, Masechet Harias. The Psukim say, and Mishnayos make clear, that we do not, as Rabbi Shechter is fond of saying, Judaism does not accept the concept of papal infallibility. We assume the Rabbanim can make mistakes. Sometimes, doesn't happen often, but a Psak could be an error. Matter of fact, even the Sanhedrin could be an error. It's going to be rare, but it's possible. As a matter of fact, the Chumash said they could be that if Rov of Klal Yisrael, Ruach Kakulo, the majority of Klal Yisrael, was violated b'shogeg, lav sheish bokares, based on an erroneous psak of the Sanhedrin, you're going to bring a joy. Let's give an example. Let's say Sanhedrin at Paskin, that you're allowed to turn on electric lights on Shabbos. Not these, incandescent bulbs for the filament. So they Paskin, and that's totally fine to do on Shabbos. And for 20 years, millions of Jews were turning on the lights on Shabbos. And then 20 years later, not that they reopen the issue and, you know, change your minds, which is also legitimate, but that was not a mistake. Just that Sanhedrin said 20 years ago held one way, and we disagree at Machlokas. But if they realized that they were in error, they were just a toast, then they say, 1 second. If it was a Machlokas, so then up until now, you were supposed to follow the last Sanhedrin Pesach, and from now on, you'll follow the new Sanhedrin Pesach. If it was a toast, you made a mistake, so now we turn around and say, the last 20 years, millions of Jews have been Machal Shabbos, the Shogeg, based on the Psak of Sanhedrin. So if Rove of the Jewish people were Machal Shabbos based on Psak of Sanhedrin, we don't see it as an individual crime, an individual Aveira, and each Jew has to bring his own Karban Chatas. Instead, we say it's a national crime. A national Aveira, you're going to bring a national Karban Chatas. That's the Par Helam Davar Shel Tzibur. But who do you, that's one of the main topics in Masechet Sanhedrin. That's where the Gemara takes up both the Bava and Yerushalmi at the beginning of the first paragraph. Well, who are you asking? Are you going to the Jews in France and the Jews in Turkey and the Jews in India to find out whether they follow this Pesach? The Gemara say no. You only look at the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. Why? Jews all over the world are Jewish. So that's what the Gemara says. Yes, but they're not kahal. The primary members of the tzibur are the Jews who live in Eretz Yisrael. All Jews are equally personally Jewish. We have as much Kedushas as Yisrael as the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, but we're only associate members in the nation of Klal Yisrael. Whereas the Jews who live in Eretz Yisrael are the full members, the primary members of Klal Yisrael. And that's what the Rambam in the Perush Mishnayos and Bechoros points out. This isn't just a Horios idea. This explains Smicha. That's what Rashi suggests, that this explains a lot of things. As again, a whole other aspect of Eretz Yisrael. And these different aspects of Eretz Yisrael can have different, they're independent of one another. So they may have different boundaries, they may have applied to start at different times. And that brings us back now to the sugya we were dealing with last week. Right? Rebbe Yehuda ben Maaseiro. What's with Rebbe Yehuda ben Maaseiro? So one of the major kashas had been, Rebbe Yehuda ben Maaseiro had this whole brilliant solution, to send a clue with the Nachri himself, and that revealed to the Nachri's Chabura that he really does not belong in Karm Pesach. Very nice. But Tosfos wants to know, it's brilliant, but it should have been unnecessary. Why didn't Rebbe Seir come himself? So maybe I can understand why he was Patur from Lila Regal. But what happened to Karban Pesach? So he wouldn't come Shavuos and Sukkot. Why wasn't he coming Pesach for Karban Pesach? So Tosfos had two answers. And Tosfos' second answer was what? Well, he wasn't chayav Karban Pesach because... right, because he lived in Netzivim. He was a rabbi of Netzivim, which was in Chutz La'aretz. So apparently Tosfos assumes that if you live in Chutz La'aretz, you're not chayav Karban Pesach. How could that be? So this concept of again, the separate aspect of Eretz Yisrael being Eretz Yisrael as a national homeland, that's why Sibur mitzvahs are rooted around, centered around Eretz Yisrael, that may be what underlies this Tosis as well. Karm Pesach is a Tzibur mitzvah. It's not for an order. I spoke this morning about the connection between Pesach and Milah, the only two mitzvahs I say that have karis. One of the main connections between Pesach and Milah is they're both mitzvahs have a lot to do. Both mitzvahs that happened, they were carried out at the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim, and both mitzvahs clearly have a lot to do with identity in Klal Yisrael. So it's not surprising, it doesn't have to be true, but it's not surprising that for Tahir Rishon put forward the idea that maybe Karm Pesach is only a chiv if you live in Eretz Yisrael. You can hear such a concept. Karm Pesach is so much it's not a carbon tzibur in the sense of it's brought by the tzibur. Individual Jews, it's not like a carbon tamid or a musaf. Every Jew has to be involved in personally in Karm Pesach. It has such a strong tzibur element, one could imagine why Tosfos would say, it's mistaber to say that it should only be a chiyah for Jews living in Eretz. So, and that explains Reuven Vasir. But I want to present to you briefly another approach also that will answer not only the question of why was Reuven Vasir, what was he doing, but it'll answer many, many questions. And that is the Maariv Chayes points out. Tosfos also, I believe, is Menachas Membav, if I remember correctly, points out that Yehuda Mevisera seems to have lived for an awful long time. Because here Yehuda Mevisera is alive during the days of Beis HaMikdash, and yet elsewhere, here by Yehuda Mevisera interacting with the father of Shmuel. It sounds like he's a contemporary of Yehuda Anasi, maybe a little bit older than Yehuda Anasi, but Anasi was a rabbi of Shmuel. Yehuda Anasi lives in the 3rd century, 200s. This is before Churban Bayis, he lived for like 200 years. Very, very, maybe. Very, very ancient man. So Tosfos suggests maybe there's more than one person named Rabbi Yehuda ben Zera. There's more than one Rabbi Elazar. There's more than one Rabbi Yehuda. Okay? It's certainly possible there's more than one person named Rabbi Yehuda ben Zera. What Maariv Chayes goes on to say, though, he lines up 7 other Gemaras. And if you want, you can see the list of the last page in the packet is a copy of Maariv Chayes. You're familiar with Maariv Chayes from his comments in the back of the Gemara. That's because he lived, I believe, he was alive at the time of the printing of Vilna Shas in the late 1800s. So they went around, the Rav family, it was a widow and her sons, who published the Vilna Shas. So they went around to different contemporaries of the Chacham and asked them for their notes on Gemara. That's what became the notes in the back of the Gemara. The little ones, beyond the Marsha and Marav Shif, many of them are contemporary people who were alive at the time. You know, the Cheshek Shlomo, the Mara Cohen, the Rashash, and the Maariv Chayes, these were people around, and they got their Gileonos. But he wrote more than just the notes on the side of his Gemara. So in his Chulas, he wrote several Sfarim, and he was very, the major Maariv Chayes was a major Talmud Chacham, who was very, very sensitive also to issues of Jewish history. So he winds up seven different Gemaras that all have Karbanos where they don't belong. You hear about people asking Shilas about Karbanos to Rabbanim who lived 2 generations after the Churban Bayis. People going over to Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi is a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. He lives like around 100 years after the Churban Bayis. People asking Rabbi Yossi Shilas about Lila Regel, Shilas about Karban Pesach, and this one, 7 different Gemaras where we talk about either Lila Regel, Karban Pesach, and it's the wrong time. And talking to people who are alive a generation or 2 or 3 after the Churban Bayis. Maariv Chayes says something is afoot. And he suggested, and then he has his kicker. He points out, I tried to find this in primary sources, I have not yet found it. I found some things that sound a little bit like it. But he writes that if he's reading the history books, secular historians, who quote a passage in the Justinian Code, Justinian was a later Roman emperor. This is way after the 5th century, I think, maybe 6th century. This is a long time after Rome had turned Christian, and this is around 500 years or so, or more, after the Roman bias. And Justinian had, there are a number of anti-Jewish edicts. One of them, apparently, is an issur against bringing Karban Pesach. You know, you can take a peek in the last page of the packet. It talks about HaKezar Justinian. Gozal Yisrael shall issue to us a Pesach v'yudal ad Nisan, and over yiknos beknas otzum. A terrible punishment, severe punishment for a Jew who will bring Karban Pesach. Now the question is, Jew will bring Karban Pesach? This is centuries after the Churban Bais. So what's going on? So he says there could be a few different ways to explain that the kasha on Justinian, but one teretz to the kasha on Justinian might be a teretz to all these gemaras. Which is, the Bar Chai suggests, it sounds like, and then he has also a Kafto, a Farach, one of the Rishonim, who deals a lot with Halachas Eretz Yisrael, who seems to indicate this. He says, the only impression you get from all the evidence, you get the impression that the Churban Bias was, Bias Sheni, by the hand of the Romans, was not the end of Karbanos. After the destruction of the Second Beis Hamikdash, it seems like Jews were still occasionally, sporadically trying to sneak onto the Har HaBayis to bring Karbanos, specifically Yom Tov time. That's why if you look at those seven Gemaras they quote, I think they're exclusively either Baalil or Rebbe or Karban Pesach. So we understand that at the very least, you're not going to bring a Karban. You can't bring Karban to Sibur because you don't have Shkolim. But at the least, they tried to bring either Karban Pesach or Olas Riyan Shalmei Chagiga to try to be Ola Rebbe, the Chiyuvim that a Jew has. There were Jews who were doing this. That's what the Maritz Chai is suggesting. There's a fair amount of evidence to put together. And then he says, you know what? He says, maybe the Teretz of Tysus, the other Tysus, well, how did Yehuda Mazir live so long? He says, I don't think this story happened during the days of the Second Beis Hamikdash. Maritz Chai says, I think that the secret to understanding the story, this story happened in the days of Yehuda Ben Bezer, the one and only Yehuda Ben Bezer who lived significantly after the Churban Bais, who was a Rav in Nitzivim. And who he didn't go to. You want to know why he wasn't going to Aliyah right with Karban Pesach? Not because he's a Ben Chutzlar, it says Maritz Chayes. The Teretz says Pashut. It was very dangerous. No one was Mukhiyuv to do that. Maritz Chakas to Fashus. There were Jews who were risking their lives to do that. But surely it's not something anyone was Mukhiyuv to do. And Reuven ben Bezerra, it may well have been too old to even, you probably have to be young and strong and fast to scurry in and out without being caught by the Roman authorities. So he says, that explains so much. The whole Gemara takes on new punim. Number one, of course he didn't go on Lila Rekel. Of course he didn't go on Karban Pesach. Well, Karban Pesach, well, Lila Rekel, nobody's a Mikdash. There were individual Jews who were trying to do this. And then he says, the question of that he doesn't, I would suggest, beyond what he said. I think so many kashas fall into place. The kasha that the first toast was raised of you know, do you see from here that he didn't have to check ID? Al pi din you have to check IDs? It wasn't the Sanhedrin that was in charge of an organized based on Mikdash. No, there were like individual people who were like sneaking on. So it wasn't necessarily like an organized situation that was with centralized authority where everything was being managed from the top. This fellow showed up, and they assumed he was part of the crew. It's not to say a riot that the din is that you're allowed to be mom and such a person. So that takes care of the nemanus issue. It takes care of the Yehuda ben Bezerra issue. It takes care of the
why he didn't kill him,
and why they did. So that Maritz Chayes does address directly. He says they didn't kill him because of a crime, not because he violated that veira of Gezel, or he violated that veira of Kol Benichal Yocho. I said, no, Tosha Mesachal Yocho. I said, no, because they realized, even if they realized, this fellow, either he's a closet Judeophile, and there was such a phenomenon, post-Churban, there was a movement, largely an underground movement of Romans who were very taken with Judaism. There were. Gemara references it occasionally, and we have external historical data also that points to that. He wasn't sure. This is a non-Jew who's very taken by Yahdus and wants to be a part of the action, or is he someone who is trying to infiltrate and then ultimately turn these people, these Jews, over to the authorities? And he's a security risk. So you remember, Sarah just sends a coded message, letting the Jews in Yerushalayim know, you should know, you have to look into the facts. And they looked into him, not just looked into him to find out who he was, but they discovered that in fact he was a spy. They discovered that in fact he was ready to kill them. So habala harbicha, hashkim lahargo. It was self-preservation. It was pikuach nefesh. It wasn't an onesh given by a beis din for a chet. It was a practical habala lahargo, hashkim lahargo. And then finally, but maybe first let's take some questions.
That makes sense about the letter, why it has to be coded.
Gevaldik. That's why the letter back is coded. The fact that even if Sarah sends a letter, it's coded because he didn't want, obviously, for obvious reasons, doesn't want the Nachri to realize what he's saying. But the letter going back, there should have been a beautiful letter from the Sanhedrin. What's this? Atman, it's even, Rishon Chaputz, Yerushalayim. The answer is exactly as Josh is saying. It was very dangerous. If the Romans would have known what was going on, they would have been in big trouble. So that's why they sent a letter that, and probably with tongue in cheek, they realized that it takes one to know one. They respond to Yudim Abisera's coded letter with a code letter of their own that he would appreciate and that he would understand. So they want him to know, you should know that we're okay, that we're alive, and you saved us, and you'll understand what this means. That was like, it's hard to imagine the depth of the Hakaras HaTov that was expressed in those handful of words. That little letter was, thank you for Mamre, literally saving our lives. Literally. And we can't even say, we'll never meet you, probably. We'll never see you. We remember Sarah. And we can't even tell you how we feel. But then you can imagine like how much depth of emotion got poured into just a few words. They were so oblique, but meant so much. Yeah.
I was a wrong.
That's a great question. I don't know if he was like a hired spy as much as someone who, sort of like a bounty hunter type. That's what I imagine. There's someone who had gotten into this, had infiltrated. He didn't live in Yerushalayim, but he had started traveling, became a part of this somehow, and decided he's going to, you know, find out some more and then turn them over, perhaps for personal gain, or perhaps because of antipathy. Yeah. But that may be what Yehuda was saying, may not have been sure what the story was, and it was too dangerous to even ask questions. Because it's such a delicate situation, you think about it, such a delicate situation. He doesn't, if he throws him off now, that may not even help, because this fellow may, if he is in fact trying to get them, he may already know who they are, and may be too late, unless he gets him back to them, the Jews in Yerushalayim, who can, and that was a gamble. He may be endangering them more, by them, him going again, but then also may save, ultimately did save them, because they were in a position to look into the facts and save themselves. Yeah, all right.
Well, it sounded like the Arami had already gone and had Karma Pesach before, and years earlier.
Right.
So
he could, if he wanted to turn them over, then he could have turned them over then? In a Karami. It's hard to know because the story itself is given in such a sparse way, which, by the way, that itself may also be because of Ayah Gemara we're trying to stay undercover here a little bit, perhaps. But it could be part of why everything is left to your imagination. Like, you're supposed to understand the lot of context that you're supposed to be getting. So it's hard to know. Hard to know whether he was trying to gather more evidence, or get a larger list of people that he could turn over. Is it that originally he started just being an interested, curious person, and then Reuben the Sarah got the impression from the way he was bragging that something had gone sour, and that he was going to go back this time and it wasn't going to be so friendly? It's hard to know.
Also, I don't understand why Reuben the Sarah couldn't have just killed him and seen him.
Number one, well, he probably would have had to answer to the authorities there. You killed him because...
So there's no authorities in your flying?
It's easier
to kill a cow than a person.
Or not a
cow, a sheep.
Who says it?
It's hard to know. That's mamish akasha from Isa. Meaning, literally, it's akasha. I mean, it's a good kasha, but there's so many just variables, like factual pieces that we don't know. But the kasha of Isa is a good kasha if it's such a strong kasha that this can't possibly be the pshat. But certainly plausible to imagine that if this was what's going on, that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseri either couldn't or maybe wouldn't, because he might not have been sure that the fellow was dangerous. But he told the Yerushalayim, essentially, look into this. And they did. And what they found was that he was a rodef. So, Abal Harkach Hashem Harkach. Raziel, and then Shai.
Isn't it like very discouraging now, because like we had Tosos and Alumdus, and maybe like he was Pater for Pesach, and if you're Pater for Pesach, then you're Pater from the Rebbe or something like that. But like really that had nothing to do with it at all.
So what you have is a good question. What you have is a machlokas, or you have a gemara, you have a kasha, and you have two different answers.
Normally, right. Like it's not like a metzias thing. It's like we don't know like what the svara is, like what was God thinking. It's like this is just the facts, what happened.
Right. In this case, we don't know. It's a good point. You say if Maratzchayis is guessing, if Maratzchayis is right, so then if there's a historical answer, so that's the end of that.
They could have been doing both. They could have been trying to teach us the halacha from
It could be. I would say like this. I once, one of the big issues, we were talking with a couple of you guys about this last week. One of the famous hak questions is there are certain brisker tyros, from Yashiv Shver Rambams, where Reb Chaim's suggestion about how to understand the Rambam flies in the face of the Rambam himself writes in a letter, in a tshuva. So what do you do? Reb Chaim's trapped the Rambam, and you have the Rambam's trapped the Rambam. So on the one hand, on the other hand, and then middle approach. So on the one hand, there are those who say that our Talmid Chachamim, I can say the words. I don't really understand this. Who say it's not up to the Rambam to say Pshat in the Rambam. That once Rambam wrote the Mishnah Torah, that became like the Neches of Kol Yisrael, and right. And what the Rambam personally felt. Deconstructionism.
Right.
So to.
I brought that up in Kolmos.
Right. So Jacques Derrida, and the deconstructionist approach to literature, right, is that authorial intent is really irrelevant, and that the work is independent of what the author meant. And it's up to us as much as anyone else to decide what that literature means. That's true if I shouldn't say it's true. That could be a valid and motive interpretation if you're not questing for truth. But in learning, it's not just a question of having an interesting idea. It's a question of trying to figure it's bakasha sa emes. It has echoes of deconstructionism. Clearly, it's not the same thing, but it's saying that we don't care so much what the Rambam himself, the person, the rabbi, meant, as much as he wrote this work, whether Ruach HaKodesh or whatever, and that expresses an emes of Torah beyond the Rambam himself. Which, again, there are Talmid Chacham who say it. I can't really defend it. I don't really understand it myself. On the other extreme, you have Rabban Amud, Talmid Chacham would say, Reb Chaim guessed. He guessed wrong. Yeah, no tainus. He didn't have access to the Shuas Rambam, but now we know that he was wrong. Period. Right. Move on. And then the middle approach. Rabbi Rosenzweig once shared with me in a conversation in his office. He thought that assuming that Shuas Rambam is legitimate. Again, there are Shuas Rambam which we know are by the Rambam, and there are those where it's not 100% clear who actually wrote it. But if it's a legitimate Shuas Rambam, so then in Achanami, that's not what the Rambam meant, unless he changed his mind, which we know he did. But if not, that's not what the Rambam meant in the Mishnah Torah. That's the end of the story. However, but it doesn't mean we're done with that idea of Reb Chaim, because what inspired Reb Chaim to think along these lines may have been a mistake. He thought there was a kash to the Rambam which really was answered by the Rambam himself. But the idea, the product of a sharp Torah mind, is still a good Torah idea, which will likely help us elsewhere. So that's not Pshat in Rambam. But maybe it's Pshat in Rashba. Maybe it's Pshat in Raita. Maybe it's Pshat in Tosfos. So this, I think, Raziel, is a golden example. Because whether or not this Pshat in this sugya, it certainly is true there are many, many dinim that can be explained by reference to this notion of Eretz Yisrael as the Mitzaref of Klal Yisrael. Whether that explains this also or not, that's a good question. And Maritz Chayes would say, right, there's nothing that needs explaining. Okay. But, and like Josh was saying, and maybe this Gemara is not a raya that only Bnei Eretz Yisrael are Chayiv and Karpan Pesach, but it's still conceivable that's true anyway, just it's not, you know, rooted in this Gemara. And certainly, the notion that there are Tzibur Dikim Mitzvahs, which are either centered around or exclusive to Eretz Yisrael, that certainly is a valuable Torah idea regardless. Whether or not it explains this, but it's a good term.
Now, doesn't this change like how one would read Ram, like Tosfos in the future? Like Tosfos is saying an answer to this question, and like the answer might, like, you know, in itself be a nice idea, but it's very possible that it just doesn't answer the question at all, and there's a completely different answer to the question.
Well, if there's a Machlokas Tosfos and Rajba, often the Rajba says that. I don't think Tosfos' answers the question at all.
But like where like it can be like proved this way. And we just didn't have anyone who happened to have said it. Not like a machlok, like a machlokas where like a machlokas in like Metzias or a machlokas in history or something like that.
Okay. So that'll happen sometimes. What does that bother you? Well, it seems like that troubles you.
A little bit.
Yeah, why?
Because then like when we're reading a Tosfos, we're assuming it's MS.
Okay.
But it might not be.
It could be that there's some historical fact that Tosfos was unaware of, and had they known that, they would have given a better answer to the question. Okay? That happens very, very rarely. And again, even when it does, like here, again, the jury can still be out in the Maritz Chayes. And Maritz Chayes is a brilliant suggestion. It doesn't necessarily mean that's the Teretz here. But I feel in Tim Salom Rachi, okay.
I think what I might be saying is that like normally there'd be say, like,
right.
So let's say, like, by this, you can't say that. Meaning the Tulsa's answer might be might be its own independent, exclusive, nice idea that might be true elsewhere, but here it's clear that it has nothing to do with the question being asked.
We usually assume the Eilu Eilu has to do with machloks and how to interpret the Torah as opposed to machloks and Matthias. Right, it's true. Even though it happens to go on Gittin, does seem to give talk about Elu Ve'elu in a historical context. And so what happened in the story of Pilevish Begiven Shoftim? Right? Was it this? Was that? And there actually, it sounds like it's a historical question, and the Gemara says Elu Ve'elu. That's a different type of Elu Ve'elu. That's where it's saying it could be both historical assertions were historically accurate. Maybe his version happened and his version happened. But the usual type of Elu Ve'elu is right, is interpretation of a din. Okay, so the vast majority of machlokas is exactly that type. Okay. But I would say also, I'll leave you with this before you go, in terms of machlokas and metzias, it's a larger question we probably should take up some other time. It's in terms of Chazal give a psak based on a scientific assumption, and nowadays our scientists assume otherwise. So the Gemara in Bryce and Nida, Daf Chavez and Beis, makes it clear that not all of Chazal's science was from Psukim or tradition or Ruach HaKodesh. At least some, if not most or all of their science, was from their scientists. The Gemara says, Betheir, you're a Mekel on this Din Chamur, Din of Nida, Safik Yisakaris, based on Sholo Chacham L'Rofim. They asked the local doctors, they asked the scientists of the times, how to assess a certain biological phenomenon. So you see, as Rabbi Shechter has said to me a number of times, he says, we do exactly what the Tanaim did. We ask our doctors. They ask their scientists, we ask our scientists. That's exactly what the Tanaim did. And therefore, Rabbi Shechter even assumes the idea of Shofet Shebi Amecha, that I'm going to follow the psak of my Rabbanim, of my generation, that's true for scientists also. That every generation, the Chiv Tefal Pesach of their Tamech Chachamim, Kefi, saved the art science at that time. And that's what Kosh Baruch Hu wanted from them. It's Kosh Baruch Hu wanted from us for our time. And a generation from now, science will change again, and we're going to have to paskin based on that science. So that's part of Kosh Baruch Hu's plan for how to actualize halacha in clinical, practical reality. Enjoy your lunch, Chaver.
Right there. It's on camera.